Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
JB, Trap J, and Quick Nick, as we take you till 4 o'clock in the best damn radio show in the city of Houston. And half the reason why it is because we said so, and we back it up. And the other half the reason why it is because we keep it real for you guys. I mean, I use the term all the time, but it's not sunshine and rainbows. And of all the people in this town that drink the Kool-Aid and still believe that the Texans are a Super Bowl team, we're the ones that keep it real.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, Nick. We don't come busting through that wall with a red pitcher. We're not on a sugar high, and we keep it real. Do we want the Texans to win? Yes. I mean, Travis's favorite freaking Jefferson's character is Wheezy for a reason. He's got a lot of wheeze, and the Texans are one of them. But if they're not playing well, he's not going to blow smoke up your ass. We're going to tell you how it is. So we watched that game yesterday. I was cautiously optimistic. I'd said a lot during the course of the week about keeping it on the Texans. I wasn't going to say a whole lot about the Packers. But they lost the three games in a row that I thought they would simply because they're the most predictable offense in the NFL. And I'm not going to be like Phil Sims, and I'm not going to be like Boomer Esiason, who just want to unload it all on Brock. It starts at the top. If Mr. McNair, if Big Bad Bob can come in over and over again and try and defend Brock Osweiler, that's a problem. Because as passionate as owners are and as much as they want to win, just when the going is good and you can call it good, you also have to be able to call a spade and say it's just not getting done. Now, this week, was it Brock's fault? No. Over the course of the season, could he have played better? Absolutely, and he's played poorly all year. I decided after watching that game twice, Bill O'Brien and the offensive play calling have got to be called on the carpet more frequently, Travis.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't because you don't – here's the thing. We aren't in the meeting room. So we don't know.
In a lot of ways, they're lucky we're not in the meeting room because I'd be the one speaking up.
But no, not if you were getting paid by them, you wouldn't.
Yeah, but if I got a couple-year contract, you fire me, I still get paid.
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
It depends. Not really. It's a lot of underlying stuff. But, I mean, you would ask the questions.
Yep.
But the thing is, if they don't give you the looks that you thought you were going to get, that changes things. If they don't give you... Or if they bring out a new package or a new set, and it's a lot of things that factor into to what gets called, why it gets called, and where it gets called. And half of that you plan a certain way because you watch the film, you put together your game plan. But then if they give you different looks, like so, if Dom comes out in if you come out in a 21 personnel and Dom comes out and something else, and they don't give you the look you was hoping to get. They don't bring out a base defense, or they don't bring out a nickel defense, and they give you something else. Then you got to switch to something that you didn't plan on switching to, and maybe it might not pair up well. Maybe the blocking scheme. So it's a lot of factors. So that's why it's always hard when we get to talking X's and O's and strategy and who's at fault and who's not at fault. That's where it gets difficult when it comes down to just talking play call, because at the end of the day, we weren't there during the preparation for it. So we don't know what was the whole philosophy around what was going to be called and what happened. Yes, we can speak on what we saw and what happened in the last few weeks and what's happened this last game. But I when you say they ran on second down too much or they passed on first down too much, that might have been the game plan. You see what I'm saying? That might have been because of
but
something.
It's the same game plan every week.
But if it's something they've seen, if it's something that they've given them, I mean, it's.
But that's why I'm putting it on the coaching staff.
But I got
you. Got to change that up, man. Just for the sake of predictability, I said this to you.
NFL is predictable.
But I said I know it's so hard to win in the NFL. Another reason why you got to mix it up from week to week. But secondly, I said you in the production meeting. If I'm Dom Capers and I'm sitting there, if it's easy for me to predict what's coming, he's got to be having a field day, knowing that he can be in the backfield, he can overplay the run, he can load the box, he can do all these things, and it's going to play right into his hands.
Well. The thing is, if your talent is better than my talent, then it also factors in. And like I said, I don't think this team is as talented as everybody thought they were. And so if that's the case, you just don't have the tools to go out there and hit nobody in the mouth.
Well, they tell everybody that they have them. And some of the best play callers in this league can find a way to stay in the game and in some cases – be in control of a game based on how you call the plays and how you keep the defense guessing. No one is keeping their defenses guessing when they play the Houston Texans. No one.
No, but I don't think anybody. The league, here's the thing. Nobody's keeping the defense guessing in no part of this league. We watch enough film as professionals to almost can tell you what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, and out of what formation it's going to happen. The end of the day, it comes down to who has guys that are better than the other one, who's going to execute a little bit better, and who's going to catch the other one sleeping. That's all it comes down to. Because when you watch film, you see the same plays, you know exactly what they're going to run. They can almost give you a playbook and say, here you go.
But Trap, come on now. You don't know.
There's some
when you're playing Green Bay with that man behind center.
He's going to run the same stuff he's ran all year long.
Audibles a few wrinkles that they put in from week to week.
Peyton Manning was the king of audibles, especially when he was in Indy. And we literally had a book, Bible-sized book of all his audibles, and could tell you exactly what he was going to run. And you still had trouble stopping it. It doesn't like we watch enough film and we communicate enough to be able to tell you what's going to be run. No matter if Aaron Rodgers is back there, no matter if Tom Brady's back there.
Where do you put the blame?
Preparation. You got to put on the guys.
Preparation's on coaching.
You got to put on the players. The players need to prepare better. The players need to play better technique. The players need to execute better.
Sounds all coaching to me.
That's not coaching. The coaching can't go out there. They can't go out there and make plays.
But they can prepare them better.
No, they are pros.
We know.
They are pros.
We talked about this with James Harden, too.
That's what I'm saying.
Some people need external motivation.
They are pros.
Coaches are external motivators. They can come in and say, this week we got to do this, therefore you got to do that, and we're going to do it at practice, and we're going to do it until you get it right, and we're going to force you to do it until we don't do it, make mistakes.
The problem is the league, because of the CBA.
That's contact.
Because of the CBA has changed. To where not just the contact, but how much you can practice, how much you can do things. And there's certain things. That's the reason why the product That's the reason why the product is so trash.
Is a because lot of people have complained about it being watered down.
Because the reason why it's like that is because if I can't hit, it's only a certain amount of walkthrough I can do to prepare myself for a game. It's only a certain amount of jog through I can do to prepare me for a game. So at the end of the day, it has to fall on the guys. Yes, I mean, I think Bill O'Brien can do a better job, but at the end of the day, these are pros. When you get to this level, it's a certain way to be a pro. And to be a pro, you need to take care of your job. Do your job. Don't worry about me doing my job. You do your job.
So it's Rick
you
Smith.
You be where you're supposed to be, and you do where you're supposed to do.
So Rick Smith plays a part in this. Because Rick Smith's putting those groceries in the cupboard that they're cooking that meal
with. He's putting the groceries that he asked for. He's putting the groceries that the head coach asked for.
So it goes back to what I've been saying all along. It's on coaching.
But here's the thing. Yeah, you can put it on whoever. You can put on everybody on Kirby is at fault. But at the end of the day, can't no coach line up for you. Can't no GM line up for you. And either you are or you aren't. Either you are or you aren't.
I get that, but I keep going back to it, and you just brought it back for me. So, at the end of the day, aside from actually going out on Sunday and performing what you've been told, at some point, whether it's preparation in particular or repetition, and I get to there's a limit, but at the same time, it comes that it's just like when we were talking about a couple weeks ago with the red flag.
Yeah, you can. I
don't know when to throw it. Don't have a procedure in place to tell you to throw it.
And I understand, and I agree with you. I think it's certain things that fall on the coach, but execution is not one of them. Execution is not, it doesn't fall on the coach.
But
it falls
I'm talking
on
about
all the
play
guys.
Play selection, man.
Play selection, no matter if I could tell you right now.
It's so predictably conservative.
It could be predictable.
It's so conservative.
It can be predictable. It can be conservative. It can be, I can give you my first 15 plays and say, here, Joe, here's my first 15 plays. My job as a pro is to get it done. And your job on the other side is to stop me from getting it done. End of the day. That's what it is being a pro.
And they're not getting it done.
And they aren't getting it done. So it falls on the players. Because you can't whoop the man in front of you to get it done. It falls on you.
I'm going to put it on the coaching first. And then I understand your point to the players. And I'm done just blaming Brock alone. Because, I said this week in those conditions, he was familiar. He was comfortable. When he's in a position that he's comfortable with, he plays better.
He played good enough to win.
Right.
And they didn't.
And I just think, however you want to place the blame, it's the same story over and over again from week to week, from year to year. And it's old, man. It's old. It's frustrating. And even the best thing that could have happened to them is the worst division in football. But even that's getting old. And even that, by the way, is not a guaranteed this year. As if Indy wins tonight, you got a three-way tie at the top.
Yeah.
And we said it was going to come down to the last week when they play Tennessee. The only thing that they have that's a positive is they're undefeated in the division to this point. They got to keep that going.
And that don't mean nothing if your record ain't good enough.
Keith McCardo said they were going to go 4-1. Well, the one has already taken place. If you think they're going to win their next four, then it is sunshine and rainbows. And Nick's got a big red pitcher of a cool drink coming your way because they got their hands full. And it starts this week in Indianapolis in a place that has been a house of horrors for them. And they, whether it's the coaching or the players or otherwise, they damn well better figure it out quick, because this season is slipping away, and this one might not enter the playoffs before it gets away if they're not careful. Let us know what you think, 713-780-ESPN, or hit us up on Twitter. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Once again, some of the greatest debates in sports history happen in our commercial breaks, and Travis and I are both very, very passionate. And please understand, people, we don't hate each other. This is not personal. This is just two different grown men having different opinions about what we're seeing that happens to be a huge negative and a disappointment over on Kirby. And before the break, Travis was talking about it being on the players. Well, I said, well, then, you know, overall, between the coaching staff, and they give them every resource, I get it, but it's how you use the resources and what you do with it to prepare them. And if it is on the players, then the general manager is the one that puts the players in the locker room. But regardless, the one consistent or two consistent elements that are completely in line with all of the negatives and predictability and mediocrity and whatever you want to say, Rick Smith, Bill O'Brien, and Bill O'Brien's coaching staff. And again, as I told you when we had this discussion last week and we went back and forth about, would I rather be a team that's rebuilding and not making the playoffs, but then trying to add the appropriate players and get, to your point, players that are willing to do the extra work and what's needed from week to week on their own if they have to, just to make sure they succeed on Sundays. It's a lot better to me than doing the same thing over and over again. And oh, by the way, this year, the same thing that everybody expects from you over and over again before you peter out is a division championship. And that's not a guarantee this year.
No, it's not. I mean, because they're inconsistent. They're inconsistent in every form and every position. They've been inconsistent all year long. And they're just not prepared. I understand that you're putting the common denominator in the whole situation. Even when the players change, the product still stays the same. I mean, I understand.
But that's a huge key. The players change, the product stays the same.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
And here's my thing is if they're as talented as we think they are, and if they're talented as the Texans are saying they are, and they aren't going out there and executing, I put that on the players. End of the day. And being a former player, the first thing I want to be is prepared. And the end of the day is, if I give you my playbook and tell you this is what I'm going to do to you, this is what we're going to do, it falls on you. Then when the offseason comes around, if we don't change the players, if we don't bring somebody else in, then that starts to fall on the coaching. That starts to fall on the GMs. But at the same time, if a player was who we thought they were somewhere else and we get them here and they're not the player that we expected them to be, that's on the player.
But then understand what I'm saying now. So I don't disagree with that. But if that's the case in year one, then by the time you start the season for year two, player A, who doesn't do it or doesn't get it, is gone so that you get a player that does.
Yeah,
so you hear me, right?
But that's
so
the,
now
yeah,
we're
that's
going a, on 3 years of the same stuff.
But that's the simple explanation. But you got to also factor in the salary cap. You got to factor those things in. That's the same reason why, regardless of how bad Brock Osweiler is this year, we're going to be stuck with him next year, regardless.
You guys want to get to some of these texts before, because we're kind of piling up.
Go ahead, bring them.
All right, first one. Us in Beaumont listen every day, and this is the best thing in H-Town since Fred and AJ had their early show. So that's from Beaumont, the 409.
Hey, keeping it clean today in the 409.
Yeah, Derek Carr would not have succeeded here. His dad would have interfered, and the fans would have had no patience for mistakes.
Trap. That was from you dealt with Dave's dad.
But his dad would, I mean, that was the thing. They thought they didn't want to deal with his pop, but I don't know how much interfering did he do. They allowed him to be around, but it wasn't like his dad had his own radio show. It wasn't like his dad was, I mean, yeah, he was always in the building because it was his firstborn, I mean, one of his boys. He wanted to see him do well.
Right.
But at the same time, I think he learned from the fact that he learned from David's, his mistakes with David, so everything changed. I don't think he's doing that in Oakland.
We got a Packers question for you, Joel, if you want it.
Okay, hang on one sec, though. I want to say something on that, Trap. The big thing I would say about that is, just like everybody else, I think Dave's dad learned his lesson with Dave. There was enough backlash and criticism after the fact to realize he was probably a little too over the top, too. Just like I think the organization should, you know, learn from what they had with Dave and what they did, they would have could have done differently.
Yeah.
I think it would have been different with Derek. I think they were scared off by the last name, but I think when you look at it from big picture perspective, that was the best choice for you at the time where you didn't have give up talent to get worse before you got better, and you could develop him. I just think that was a huge miss.
No question.
Go ahead, Nick. Nick, dead air is terrible. Give me a text message. You said Packer question.
All right, so, yeah, we have a question here from the 409 again. Does this season for Green Bay feel kind of like 2010, or is it just going to be a bust at the end of the year?
Yeah, I can't go there. 2010 was a special year, but they also were all on the same page. They overcame injuries. They went out and filled holes quickly. If they had to get a free agent, they would. Ted Thompson doesn't do that anymore. And though the defense was the number one rush defense for the first several weeks until they hit Dallas, and then after that, I just see too many holes in the defense, even if they are finally getting healthy. And though Jordy Nelson and Rodgers are back on the same page, in 2010, it was a different Aaron Rodgers, and it was a different set of receivers. And like to Trapp's point, the guys were putting in the extra work, the communication, they were always on the same page. And I just don't see 2010 Green Bay Packers this year. I still see a team that can win the division, and as long as you got him behind center, you got a chance to win. I just don't see the same momentum.
That leads back into what we talked about. You said those 2010 guys, what did they do? They got extra work. They worked together with Aaron.
I assume they did.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they probably did. And they got the results. Well, these guys here in town, they don't go get extra work in. They, like you said, bye week, when they were looking terrible, what'd they do? They all scattered like roaches.
Here's the biggest problem I got with that too, Travis. If those were veterans, then I get it and say, okay, you brought the wrong guys in. If those are rookies, then the coaching staff and others, the general manager, everybody says from day one, man, you better not only study that playbook and study everything we give you, but you better put the extra work in because we only got so much time with you on the field and so much time in the meeting room. You got to do this stuff at home. But if you want to be successful, and we're going to be successful, you got to do that.
Brock Osweiler is a veteran. Brock Osweiler.
I'm talking about Miller. I'm talking about Fuller. I'm talking about young kids who need to be on the same page with Brock Osweiler.
That's when he's supposed to pull the bull
by
the horns.
You got mad at me when I said in the bye week should be working on this.
But I'm saying that's where it still falls on the players. Because at the end of the day, the coaches can't say nothing. You gonna tell these $1 million kids that they first week off that they got to stick around and go to work?
You don't again. And there's a way to do this and avoid the CBA issues. You can encourage that. You can suggest that. You just can't tell them they have to do that.
And you're going to suggest it, and they're going to exactly what they're going to tell you is we were forced to stay here. And everybody's going to say, because right now, because the player relationship with the CBA, with the NFLPA is on a whole other level.
They're not forced to be in off-season workouts, but they know that they should be there.
And that's the same thing. And that's a problem because guess what? It's a lot of people get better work other places.
The fact that other teams and other players on other teams are willing to do these things and the Texans players aren't.
Well, you know, in Green Bay, they don't require none of them to do off-season workout.
But they are there.
No, they aren't.
Most of them are.
No, they are not. No, they are not. Because I worked out with a gang of them in Orlando. So I know for a fact a lot of them aren't there for off-season
workout. So then where is the deficiency happening on Kirby?
Your guess is as good as mine's. Because we aren't in the building, so we don't know what is being told to the quarterback.
But it's acceptable to them It's just not acceptable to the rest of us. Because it's the same behavior happening over and over.
I don't know if it's
week to week,
I don't know if it's acceptable to them. I just think it's the same BS that they're feeding us each and every day. I think they're feeding us whatever they want to give us because that's the whole Bill Belichick mentality. Right. You know what I'm saying? But I think in the long run, you almost miss a refreshing voice like Gary Kubiak, who can tell you this guy playing like dog. Like dog mess. This guy's not doing his job. This guy needs to get better.
Brock tried the Gary Kubiak, I got to play better. But from week to week, when it's constantly the same message from him, that's not acceptable either.
Exactly. So,
all right, Jordan, you've been waiting a long time. Let's get you in here before we get to break. What's up?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to make the comment that I guess both of y'all are just trying to point the finger at this one selection of people.
No.
It's everybody. It's everybody's fault.
It is. I'm not trying to pinpoint one, but I'm saying that you have to be able to point fingers now because the product is terrible.
Well, I mean, in all reality, there's 31 losers and there's one winner. So, yeah, the product is terrible, but, I mean, not everybody can be the Patriots. I mean, it's everybody's fault. I mean, Nuke, he dropped the ball. And you got the defense allowed a 98-yard drive, and you got bad play calling. It's everybody's fault. I mean, and you can point the finger at Rick Smith saying, oh, he should have drafted Derek Carr. It's everybody's fault. So just it's not black and white that, oh, it's Brock Osweiler's fault this week, or, oh, it's the player's fault this
Jordan,
week.
Jordan, it's not just week to week. It's year to year. When you go year to year and you're creating this, you're committing the same mistakes and having the same problems and the same deficiencies, that's when you have to get people on the carpet. Does that make sense?
Teams in the NBA right now have the same problem year to year because rosters don't turn over year to year. You have the same players every single year, so you're gonna have.
That's
the
not
same
true.
Problem.
Rosters turn over. Jordan, we appreciate the call. We're up on it. We got to get to break. We can talk about it on the other side. ESPN 97.5. Never leave. Counting up this money. We ain't never sleep.
You got V12. I got 12. ESPN 97.5.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
You know, people in life have different ways of dealing with adversity, as we just talked about in the break. Some people handle it better than others. Some people take matters into their own hands. But at the same time, at the end of the day, if that behavior is a one-time thing, you forgive it.
Yeah.
If that behavior becomes a regular occurrence, if you forgive it, then it's on you. But it still doesn't have to be acceptable to your fan base. I think is it fair to say that the McNairs have accepted it?
No.
He's coming to, he came hard to defend Brock yesterday.
I think because he saw that Brock played pretty good. Brock played good enough to win. And nobody wants to sit there and throw their $72 million investment to the Wolves.
Well, that's only because, let me ask you this. Would it be different if his contract expired at the end of the year, Brock's, instead of knowing that you got him next year, so there's nothing you can say that's going to make a difference, so you probably say the positive thing in Brock's way?
You say the positive thing, because guess what? If he turns it around next year and puts together an MVP year, nobody will remember this year. Nobody will care what happened this season. Only person that will remember is Brock. And Brock is going to remember everybody who wronged him. And if the McNairs came back and was talking crazy about him, or if anybody was talking crazy about him, then he would get up and leave and go somewhere else. You got to think, the reason he left Denver was to feel comfortable. That's the reason he left Denver. It wasn't just to get out of Peyton Manning's shadow.
There was bitterness, too.
It was bitterness over what? Not finishing the year as a starter?
Yep.
It's Peyton Manning.
But it's a bad Peyton Manning. It's not the same Peyton Manning that was the Colts Peyton Manning.
But the bad Peyton Manning still makes better decisions than you made as a youngster.
You know they all got egos. You know that didn't sit well with him. And you know that he wanted nothing more than a fresh start with an organization that he felt believed in him.
Well, they was gonna believe.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. It's very fair. I mean, but you bought that on yourself. But that tells you you're a weak minded individual.
Look, I'm not arguing with you simply because at this point in the season, you better learn how to not stare a receiver down and look him off.
So I think that's one reason why Bob is gonna continue to to give him, to uplift the kid, because guess what? You want to keep him as happy and as and be as helpful as you can towards him, because next year you're hoping that you get something out of him. And not just that, it was I remember it was Coop actually bought us in one time where Dante we lost, I forgot who we lost to, but Dante Robinson goes off on David and was destroying David in the media, destroying him. Well, Coop calls defensive meeting. First, he talks to Dante, and he goes, guys, I understand your frustration. I understand you want to get rid of him. I understand all of that. But I can't get anything for him if you guys talk crazy about him.
Which is a really fair point. That's the best explanation that I could possibly hear from anybody in a situation.
You know what I'm saying? So I think – so not saying that he's trade bait, but saying if it came to it, we can't badmouth the guy.
There's a reason in the NBA – you might not like the guy. You might know all of his shortcomings, but he might find his way quickly into your rotation one night or two nights in December and get playing time. It's quite simply because he has to have some value in order to get value back. Otherwise, everybody knows you're going to cut him, and if they really do want him, they can just pick him up.
Exactly.
That's sad, though, if you're talking about a guy that you've wagered that much money on.
Well, I mean...
Still not done placing the initial, the overall crux of this on the coaching staff.
Man, I'm not putting overall on the coaches. You know what? The only part I agree with that caller is it's on everybody. It's not on just the coaches. It's not on just the players. It's on everybody. But at the end of the day, they prepare you to go in the game and do what you're supposed to do.
The coaches do?
They always do. Regardless, the coaches prepare you at some point to play the game.
They got a system in place for the red flag? I'm just asking questions.
I'm just saying, but that's being petty. I'm just talking about...
No, it's not. That's part of being organized.
It is, but I'm just talking about just in general as far as
you plays, and I have talked about this quarterback whisperer label. You'll give it to North Turner.
I never called him a quarterback whisperer.
Everybody else did, and we said that North Turner has validated and punched his ticket to be a quarterback. Right? But Bill O'Brien, everything he's shown us here is... This guy ain't whispering. He's yelling from the treetops that he ain't that guy.
Dude, I'd never called him a quarterback whisperer.
I didn't say you did.
Exactly. I never called. And I always thought, and I even look at the Penn State thing. Yeah, okay, you struggle to win them games when you're at Penn State. Whatever. You know what I mean? But look what the guy's done since you've been gone. You know, I don't call him a quarterback whisperer. I mean, when you think about Christian Hackenberg, who's his big quarterback guy that he recruited at Penn State, he didn't want any part of him, didn't touch him. And you see what he's doing in New York? Nothing. You see what I'm saying? So you talk about the quarterbacks that he coached before in New England. They brought him in here. What did they do? Nothing. You see what I'm saying? So I put it on all of them, but at the same time, coaches still prepare you to play the game.
But they're not prepared good enough.
That's on them. That's on the players.
Come on, man. If you see, man, what about your quarterback coach? Talking about mechanical issues and looking receivers off,
well, mechanical. That's
part of the coaching staff.
That's on him. If he continues to beat that browbeat with you and tell you, don't stop staring down DeAndre, stop staring down DeAndre, stop staring down DeAndre, and you keep staring down DeAndre, what else am I going to tell him? Stop staring down DeAndre one more time.
Every coach has drills, whether it be footwork or drills to take your attention somewhere else so that you don't stare him down. There's ways. There's ways, right? We can beat it forever, okay? But I'm just saying, overall, when you look at it, and then it consistently keeps happening, and there's issues from week to week. And again, you say you're taking the play calling away from Godsey, but the play calling hasn't got better. It's gotten worse, or it's just damn stale.
We can call the play calling. We can say that's on the coaches. Oh. But when you say executing of the plays, that's on you.
But I never put it on just executing the plays. Yeah, but I'm saying at the end of the day, even, the play calling, the conservativeness, the overall, when we get to a few weeks ago with the red flag, what play to throw it on.
Unless it's going to turn into Eric Coryell out here, everybody's going to say, oh, we're too conservative. Now, everybody said the same thing about Coop when he was here. Oh, he's too conservative. He runs on that. Everything Coop's offense was based on the run. Even when Peyton Manning was at his best in Indy, it was based off the run. You have to beat the run, and then play action pass. In this league, if you go out there, and that's the reason why our team can never pass block when it comes time, because when it's time to pass, they know we're passing. You can't sit there. If you don't keep the balance of the offense, if you don't do it in this league, you'll get crushed.
But because it's the same thing when you're trying to create balance, and everybody knows on second down and 10 you're going to run it, and everybody can predict it.
Because you have to.
You got to mix it up, man.
But you have to. End of the day, if you don't come down 60-40 or 50-50 or 55-45 when it comes to run pass, they'll eat you alive in this league.
I don't disagree. But I'm saying, but when predictability comes into it and you call the same plays at the same time from week to week, from game to game, and everybody on the planet knows when it's coming.
Everybody on
the
planet,
that's a problem.
I mean, they assume.
All right, not everybody, but enough people know. What do you want to say about it? What do you got to say about it? What do you want to chime in about? And what's really chapping your ass in terms of the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN. You can text. You can call. Nick's checking the text. We're taking the calls. Yuli's back there making sure that you keep it straight and narrow when you do dial in. And on the same time, you can reach us on Twitter. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
I see your dirty face hide behind your collar. What is done in vain?
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Welcome back to Travis and Joel. Yeah, man. Joel's taking a bathroom break.
Joel's just
MIA. Yeah, he's taking a bathroom break. It's okay, man. You know, we love Joel. I had to go hit the head as well. So, what we got on the text message line?
Yeah,
man?
We got one an interesting texter wanted to know your take on Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. What is going on? Why is this such a down year from last year? Can they turn things around next year?
I think they could turn things around, of course, from this year to next year. But I mean, it's just a down year. I mean, when you talk about the turnover, as far as when you lose guys, when you go to a Super Bowl, everybody poaches players off your team. Everybody comes and gets some of the guys, and that's basically what's happened. They lost a few guys. When you lose a leader in the locker room like Josh Norman, that always hurts. But I think it's just a year to year basis. You got to remember, when Pittsburgh won in 05, they didn't go to the playoffs in 06. Right. And then they won the Super Bowl again in 07. So it's all a matter. It's just timing, man. It'll
so
be
we had
right.
a texter text in, Joel, and wanted Travis's take, but your take as well on the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton.
Here's my thing, too. It's not just Josh Norman. But as you've said, Trav, time and time again, it's hard enough to win in this league.
Yeah.
But to maintain a consistency and then also have everything line up for you like it did last year. You know, everything fell into place. They won every close game. They did everything the right way. And those seasons are like lightning in a bottle. The way you create a legacy and the kind of imaging and the kind of reputation that a Patriots have, that a Spurs have in basketball, is you find ways to do that consistently or more frequently than most. And it's not just Josh Norman leaving, as you said, but also, as you can attest to, guys in that locker room start thinking they're a little better than they really are in some degrees because of the fact that the team's had success and they want to get paid and they start feeling like, hey, I did my part, so I should start getting mine. And we went to the Super Bowl, so that means that we're pretty damn good. That means I'm pretty damn good. And then, you know, like you said, you got to pay guys more money. You got to deal with more hard decisions because now the average wants to be above average, whether it be with playing time or with payment, right? Those things factor in. And then the guys that were easy to talk to and coach and discipline in years past suddenly have a little bit more attitude because they've been there, done that, and look, they've smelled and experienced success. So I think all that factors in. And that's why I said, and Trap, I guess we didn't say this on the air, but the minute that the Cam Newton thing happened, the first thing that I said, and I don't know if we did say it on the air or not, but the first thing I said was, there's more to it. And I immediately went to Twitter and said, this smells like he was at that Golden State-Houston game the other night and wanted to stay till the bitter end and missed a curfew, and it got to be a bigger issue. So whether it was that or something else, the first thing I said was there's more to it. The second thing, which is kind of Travis to what I was saying, but creates a bigger problem for Carolina going forward, is Cam said all the right things initially in the press conference. Hey, he's our coach. Those are the rules. I got to follow him. But then a follow-up question was asked, is this the first time this has happened? The answer was no. So that means he's done it in the past and hasn't been disciplined. And then all of a sudden, now he is being disciplined. If it is just this and that kind of thing happens, now you're losing your locker room.
Yeah, no, I think that's the reason. And here's the thing: when Chico's a great coach, Ron Rivera's a great coach. He's a great, even better dude. So, if it was just a tie, like you said, and he's reminded you, and he's reminded you, then it's not that Chico's going to lose his locker room. It's the fact that I've warned you, but it got to a point where if I don't do something, then I'm going to lose my dress code, and it's going to be for what?
And that's the beginning. And that's the beginning of what
could be a lot of other problems.
Right.
You know, when you think about it, is if Cam shows up with a turtleneck on and no tie, then all of a sudden, the next guy, why does Joe Blow, the free agent that we just picked up this week, say, well, shoot, Cam don't wear a tie. Well, I'm gonna wear a tie.
Because you're not Cam.
Exactly. But
the fact that if a guy that's on special teams and a backup player did the exact same thing, he'd probably be cut.
Yeah. Not necessarily. Chico's not. He's not that type of dude.
I'm with him, but in most systems.
Yeah. Some places they're not going to trip as much.
Bill Belichick's going to cut you.
Not on the dress code.
Salisbury was saying this morning when he played for Dennis Green, Dennis Green would call you in and cut you. If it's a team rule and you're not following a team rule and you're not a big-time player, you're gone. That's how you send the message.
I guess for the people who aren't big name guys.
It goes back to Hard Knocks with Fisher, where the guy, you know, the rule of the team is no chicks in the dorm room.
And then the guy
brings a chick in the dorm room.
That's
twofold. You do what you said you're going to do for one, but you send a message to the rest of the team. You do something like this, and you know what the consequences are.
And not just that was a guy who's never going to make the team in the first place.
That's what I'm.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, during the season. I don't know if he's cutting a guy during the season for no foolishness like that.
Depends on who he is and what role he plays.
I agree, but I don't see you doing that because I think a lot of guys, you know, I don't know. I just if Chico had to suspend him for a little bit, I think it had to be going on for a while, and then probably didn't help. Like you said, if you thought he missed curfew, maybe. I mean, what day if they got there all week? What day was that game?
The Golden State game?
Yeah.
Was that on Thursday? It was a TNT game.
So he probably didn't have curfew. I mean, if he did, it probably wasn't until 2 in the morning anyway.
Yeah, I just think, you know, regardless of what it was, there's got to be more to it. It just seems like there's something missing that we don't know yet, and maybe we never will. But at the same time, it just seemed like that was a little bit too much. And here's the other thing. Derek Anderson didn't throw a bad ball. I mean, and he's probably supposed to do the whole first series, which only translated to one play because it was a turnover. But Cam Newton probably could have thrown the same ball that Derek Anderson did. Not sure that he could throw it any better. But the fullback didn't catch it, took a fluke bounce, and it didn't change the outcome of the game because Seattle dominated from start to finish.
Exactly.
So with that being said, I mean, it is what it is, but at the same time, getting blown up. Yeah, sure, Nick, whatever. You've got text, let's bring them in now.
Two comments and one question. I'm kind of to the point where I want them to lose out. He's talking about the Texans. The Texans can get a higher draft pick. That's from the 713.
But who would you take?
I have no idea.
What's your biggest need? That's the thing.
But here's the thing.
I think that's from the fan base side that I'm coming from, which is I've seen this script play out before, and I'm tired of it. So if we're not going to get better from year to year to make that next step, then maybe it's time that we take a step back so that we can maybe take two steps forward the next time.
But you're right.
Part of it is you got to identify.
What do we need? Offensive lineman?
And do you take an offensive lineman that high? Because look, the track record, and I was talking this with my boys playing basketball Saturday morning, the track record of a lot of the drafts lately in terms of the top five, top 10 picks that have been used on offensive linemen haven't gone so well. From Luke Jokel to Robinson from Auburn.
Cam Robinson, he's not playing guard, and he's banged, but he was always a guard.
He was the number two pick in the whole draft, benched.
They reached for him at tackle, and I mean, end of the day, where is he? He's in St. Louis.
Yep, Los Angeles now.
Yeah, I mean, that's not saying much. I think if he goes somewhere else, he'll get a lot better a lot better coaching and be prepared a little bit different. But you got to also factor in Luke Jokel was.
And I'm just giving you, overall, the offensive linemen drafted that high haven't turned out like Long, Jake Matthews, top 10 pick, my man from Wisconsin and Cleveland that we talked about, Joe Thomas. There's not that kind of offensive lineman out there. It's like tailbacks. Everybody says tailbacks, you should wait to the second round because with life expectancy, unless he's special, right?
Yeah.
But then again, it gets on your scouting department to say who's special and who's the next Zeke Elliott and who's not going to be a guy that doesn't pan out that you take in the first round.
I think, to tell you the truth, when you're looking at Leonard Fournette, you're looking at Dalvin Cook, you're looking at the kid. I think you take the kid from San Diego State if he's eligible.
Barkley from Penn State.
I think you take those guys in the second round, but I think you take Fournette and Dalvin Cook in the first round. I think Nick Chubb, he's having a rough.
Medical comes in.
So you come in. So you take him in the second round.
You got to have a solid Chubb if you're going to waste a first round on him.
Exactly. But you know the crazy part? His cousin is going to be a top 15 pick. Defensive lineman at North Carolina State. He's going to be top 15.
So he's a solid Chubb?
Yeah, he's a solid Chubb. Another Chubb.
He's a good Chubby.
But then I think you talk about what's the running back from Tennessee that just talked about transferring? Jalen Hurts? Whatever. I think you got to try to talk him into coming into the draft and not transferring to another school. It's a lot of stuff, man. I don't believe in tanking because I don't think. Unless you're taking a quarterback right now.
Corey Clement in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
He's a second, third.
Yeah, exactly. But unless you're taking a quarterback, because right now with us having Lamar Miller, I think, you could take a running back
You don't need a running back.
We don't need one. But yet, both Fournette and Dalvin Cook, in my opinion, are generational players. They are players like Zeke Elliott.
You need the guy with the keys. And if you're not going to take a quarterback, then Bill O'Brien just got done with his press conference. You know where the first two things he blamed?
What?
Offensive line and protection and special teams.
Protection was terrible. Offensive line was terrible.
So with that being said, where would you go if you get a high draft pick because you don't make the playoffs? That's a question we can ask you guys as well. Two in the books, one to go. Where did the time go? It just flew because you know why? We're having fun. We're getting good discussion. We're taking sides. So, you know what? That's what a good competitive atmosphere is all about. You want a good competitive atmosphere? Getting ready for the holiday season? I got one for you. How about the Lone Star Shootout presented by 811? Pac-12, SEC, and Big 12 SEC showdowns? Hey, good conference play. Conference teams. Big 5 conferences. Solid entertainment at the Toyota Center. Saturday, December the 17th. The A&M Aggies against the Arizona Wildcats, who are 11th in the country. At 11 a.m., followed by Shaka Smart's Longhorns against the Arkansas Razorbacks at 1:30. Tickets are going fast because it's a great doubleheader. One ticket gets you to both games. That's $20. That's not bad, especially around the holidays. Take the whole family. You got a lot of family and friends coming in. You guys got a lot of celebrations going on for the holidays. Well, you're looking for stuff to do? Here's something to do, and it's a great deal. The Fuddruckers Family Pack, 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 drinks, 4 coupons for a free Fuddruckers sandwich, $99. All tickets at HoustonToyotaCenter.com or 866-4-HUE-TIX. That's 866-446-8849. Arizona, top 25 team, always play great basketball. A&M and Coach Kennedy want to show that they can compete with the best. And then you got Texas and Arkansas. It is a treat for basketball fans all over Houston. You should be there. Again, Saturday, December 17th, it's a doubleheader. $20 for a ticket or $99 gets you that Fuddruckers family pack. Every way, anyway, be there for a great, great basketball afternoon.
ESPN 97.5.